In the beginning was the
Word.
Okay, you don't need me. Yes, exactly, the Word. And John 1 continues, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. You hear that? The Word was God. You can't tell me that the Word, that our words don't matter. There is incredible power involved. I mean, this is what's at our fingertips. When you think about it, it's kind of like electricity. If you know what you're doing and you have an understanding of electricity, you're going to light up a city, you know, power computers and air conditioners and all the things that we need. And if you misuse it, it could be damaging and disastrous. The same goes for your word. If you don't use your word with that understanding and care, it's damaging. And when you use it well, it has the potential for creating a fantastic life. Now, wouldn't you say it might be wise to learn about how to use your word? Thought so. In the beginning of any creative process is the word, and every word, silent, spoken, and written, is a creative process if it's uttered even with the tiniest grain of belief behind it. When you hold your word in mind, declare it, and believe it, it is done. Spirit has no choice but to organize that thought into form. Jesus said, "Therefore I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours." He's already given us that formula. So when I was 16 years old, living in Waco, Texas, back in the 60s, I called a radio station and talked with the disc jockey and flirted with the disc jockey. And I was just making a request, but, you know, the conversation went on for like an hour and a half. Eventually we met and dated. And sometimes on Saturday night, he had to work. So I sat in the studio with him, and I watched him queuing up records. For those of you who aren't familiar, there were actually these turntables that spun around. He put a record down on it, and a needle would go on it. And as soon as he would hear the song start in queue, it wasn't on the air, he would back it up a quarter of a turn so that when he hit the button, it would be up to speed and start immediately. And then he would talk over the intro right up to the vocal, just nail it. I know a lot of you people hated that, but it's an art to finish your sentence at just that moment. And I watched him doing that, and all I could think is, dang. Well, imagine my Texas accent then. Dang. I really want to do that. I want to do that. There were no women in radio back then. Well, there might have been a few. They would have been in major markets, and they were buried in the overnight shift. The thinking was, what woman during the day, while mopping her floor in a dress and high heels, would want to hear another woman talking to her on her radio? I know, right? Okay, so my mom, in great overcare and love, tried to discourage me. She said, "It's very competitive. It's a man's world. You really need to have something to fall back on." So we talked about different things and sort of landed on secretarial skills. That would be my fallback. But I had a dream. And this was very important to me. It made me feel amazing just to think about it. Now, this wasn't in a gotta have it or die kind of desperation way. It was more like a yummy, delightful, thrilling way. So many nights, as I would drift off to sleep, I was sitting in that seat. I had confidence. I queued up records. I talked on the radio right up to that vocal and nailed it. It felt so good that I returned to this juicy imagined state pretty much every night for a very long time. A year later, we moved to Detroit from Waco. That was a culture shock. So I did what was familiar to me. I reached out to the disc jockeys there. Okay, so I was kind of a groupie. Don't judge me. Eventually, one of them taught me some of the basics. He showed me about writing news. So we'd rip off the copy from the AP or the UPI newswire and show me how to edit that down for broadcast. Then I would go into a studio and record it, and he would critique my work, which was pretty awful, but hey, you know, I was young. And it was fun. A couple years after that, I got a job at a radio station. Hold your applause. As a secretary. Okay. So Mom was kind of right. But I used the production studio after hours and recorded and practiced and talked to my friends and anybody I knew in radio. It was just that ongoing thing. Then my day came in 1975. I was hired at a Detroit automated oldies station doing the news overnight, thanks to affirmative action. And it was fun. I wasn't that good, but, you know, I was overnight. The planting to harvest for my imagined state grew from seed to seedling to plants, and then it bore fruit in a total period of time about 7 years. But there was always forward movement as people and opportunities presented themselves along the way. So it always felt like it, and there I was, drifting off to sleep, imagining having my radio career. Now, what I did not know at that time is I was actually correctly using my thoughts, my words, my imagination in harmony with the law of thought. The definition of the word law in Charles Fillmore's Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, which is my Bible, so to speak, is the orderly working out of the principle of being. Law is the orderly working out of the principle of being. Man, by keeping the law of right thought, works in perfect harmony with divine laws and thus paves his way to spiritual consciousness. Don't you want some of that? When you're in harmony with divine laws, it's like being in harmony with, say, gravity. A pilot understands that gravity doesn't discriminate. If you don't understand lift, thrust, and drag, gravity pulls you down. But if you do understand, and with the training that you need, you fly and you land safely, and landing is pretty much a controlled crash when you think about it, working with gravity. Understanding divine laws and practicing right thought through imagination, words, and beliefs is the orderly working out of the principle of being, of your very existence. So if you go back to page one of the Bible, read the story of the creation of Genesis, you'll recall the words, "And then God said, let there be," fill in the blank. To me, this story isn't about 7 days that God, an invisible man with a long gray beard and a scorecard, created the universe. To me, if you read between the lines metaphysically, the story of creation is our instructions. The story tells us how the creative process of the universe works, which includes God, and it includes us, how we make things happen in our own lives. And then God in me said, "Let there be a radio career." And behold, it was good for 23 years as both a news journalist, a disc jockey, and a radio morning show personality in a major market. My awareness of being a disc jockey in my imagined state helped me give life to my conception. Just as in gardening, I didn't plant the seeds and then 3 months later come back and have this lovely garden. There was tending to be done. I gave my conception water, sun, and fertilizer in the form of love, attention, and my imagination, along with my belief for a few minutes per night as I fell asleep when I was behind the microphone. I even took requests. I also pulled weeds. Any doubts planted by others was eliminated. I was not interested in hearing about all of the obstacles I might face. If I didn't hear, "You'd be great at that," I kind of kept it to myself. And that's spiritual secrecy. And that is the closet that's mentioned in the scriptures. When you pray, go into your closet. And when you have shut the door, pray to your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. I was privately and secretly knowing I was going to be on the radio someday. How it happened was really none of my concern. So that's how it works. Whenever you're imagining the worst or the best, if you're feeling the emotion of it, which is effectively believing it, you are praying to your Father who is seeing in secret. And don't be surprised if someday, when you see the evidence of your belief, whether you're tending that garden. Incidentally, after 23 years in radio, I actually became an administrative assistant and then an executive assistant, basically a secretary. I didn't fall back on it. I chose it. And for 21 years, that career served me well. Thanks, Mom. So, you may be wondering how to operationalize this in your own life. I don't know. I can't tell you what's going to work for you, but I can share with you what worked for me, what I believe, and what I've attested and applied in my own life. So I invite you to go to the bookstore, cruise the shelves, read the covers, table of contents, and buy what speaks to your heart from the consciousness of where you are right now in your process. You'll know, you'll be drawn to it. If you don't see something there, which would surprise me, go online and find out, do like a search for New Thought authors. I can tell you that Charles Fillmore, Neville Goddard, U.S. Anderson, did I say Christian Larson? Ernest Holmes, they made a huge impact in my life. Big changes came. I also read a lot of New Age books, which is different than New Thought. These were books on things like crystals and oracles and numerology, and I found them incredibly fascinating and great add-on, but I kept coming back to the power of God within me instead of the magical things outside of me. And your mileage may vary. It's up to you. Go with your heart. So I started my reading in the early 80s, and I found my first Unity Church in Metro Detroit in 1985. And that was the legendary Reverend Jack Boland. He opened a whole new world to me. I didn't even know that there were churches like Unity. I went to classes. There was one every single Wednesday night. Sometimes I also did a daytime version. I read. I used Reverend Jack's five-step system for transformation. Formed a mastermind group. That's where we support one another, because it's easier sometimes to believe it for another person than for ourselves. Designing an image book. It's like an image board, only each page is dedicated to something like prosperity, travel, love, whatever you're working on, and you could put it on your coffee table in like a photo book. Journaling, goal setting, and powerful affirmations. And I also listened to tons of Jack's cassette tapes. I don't even know if I could play them, but I have digitized them. There was a lot of knowledge that I gathered during that time, but I still hadn't cracked the code for really applying it to my life. So I was believing things and had a mindset, but I was still living my life pretty much the same way. There were some changes and a lot of good things. I met my husband and didn't sabotage that relationship, so that was a good step in the right direction. And you may know him. He's the one that's on the radio on NPR. I wanted to tell you another story. Remember when we had those wristbands that was stop complaining? Right. And if you complained, you had to flip it over to the other wrist and start over at day one for 21 days. How many people were successful at that? Never complained for 21 days. Any hands? Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, well, in 2012, I was going to a church that did this. And I couldn't get through 21 days. I couldn't even get through one day. After four, I gave up. I just said, to heck with this. And it either went into the trash or a drawer somewhere. I'm not sure what happened to it. Fast forward 5 years to 2017, and I started to have this feeling of complacency, like, there's got to be more to life than this. And it made no sense. I was in the DC area, had a great job, had a wonderful husband, wonderful son, nice townhouse in the DC area, income, no problems with finances. I mean, I had nothing to complain about, but it still felt like something was missing for me. So I was on track to retire in about a year. A little bit more than a year, and I felt like I gotta have a plan. I wanna serve something bigger than myself and have a fulfilling and meaningful retirement. So I started participating in this Facebook page that I happened across that's hosted by a guy named David Allen. Not that one, not the Getting Things Done guy, somebody else. And he helped me learn more about how the mind works, the subconscious, the nature of God, my place in the universe. Talked a lot about Neville Goddard. That's where I found out about him. But this refreshed my learning from the 80s, but this time I looked at it differently. One recommendation was a book by New Thought author Neville Goddard, who was born about 50 years after Charles Fillmore. Their lives overlapped a little bit, so they were almost contemporaries. And while I was reading his first book out of 10, and I read them in the order that he wrote them so that I kind of progressed with them, it's called At Your Command, it hit me. This was like the ton of bricks that I'd been waiting for. The secret was not to eliminate my complaining or my negative thinking, because nothing lives in a vacuum. It was to replace it with something. Duh. So I replaced it with better words. Everything in the beginning is your word. So that launched me into a rocket ship of awareness and enlightenment. And I decided to start meditating, even though I could not quiet my mind. Somebody said, Gail, just do it every day. It's a practice. Don't worry about it if you can't quiet your mind. Just do it every day. So I started doing it every day. After a couple of weeks, I started to do that head nodding, you know, falling asleep part. So I went from one extreme to the other. And that took a couple weeks. And then I hit the zone, the floating, the insights, the beauty of the silence. I selected a series of affirmations that felt good. I definitely improved my words, not just when I had 5 minutes to say a few affirmations, not just when I was meditating, every time I opened my mouth, every time I caught myself going down the rabbit hole in my thoughts. When somebody started, I was, you know, an admin at a big company sitting out in the middle of the room, anytime somebody walked by and said, good morning, Gail, how are you doing? Instead of telling them about how tired I was, which I was always tired, instead of telling them what my boss was doing and complaining about him, I said, I feel fabulous. I said, it's a great day. Life is good. And I didn't focus on affirmations that dealt with specific things like prosperity and health and all of that. I kind of went with the big blanket statements. Some of you who might be Abraham Hicks fans would be familiar with this one. Everything is always working out for me. Oh, I latched onto that puppy. I used that one all the time. And then David Allen on his page added, in magical ways. So the expectation was that everything's always going to work out, but how? Oh, can't wait to see that. So that's still one of my favorite things to tell myself because it's easy for me to believe that. After a couple months of practicing that, catching myself in complaints, replacing it with one of those, I started to feel better and things started to look up for me. The grumpy gossipers stopped coming to my desk. The fun people showed up. I got lunch invitations where there was laughter and fun and excitement for living. And after 20 plus years on antidepressants, my psychiatrist said, in great excitement over my progress, you absolutely can go off antidepressants. And I've been off of them for 5 years. Yeah. I also decided to have some fun with some of these ideas. I did these little experiences, little experiments. Moving has always been really stressful for me. Packing is like the worst. And we were about to leave a house we'd been in for 16 years of collecting junk, and we're going to pack it all up and move to Virginia Beach. And I thought, okay, my new world, my new mind, my new attitude, this is going to be the easiest move we've ever had. An adventure. Fun. I can't wait. And once I made this decision, it wasn't 1 or 2 days later that my husband pokes his head into my little home office and said, I've made an executive decision. Let's have the movers pack up the house. I went, I think that's a fine idea. And he left, and I went, yes! And one of my other little experiments was, while I was in meditation, I was thinking about the 5 guys, that the executives that I supported at Deloitte. And I thought, one of them just imagined somebody telling me how appreciated I was and that I was their favorite admin of all time. I thought, what the heck, I have nothing to lose. This is just an experiment. So the day before my last day, I get a phone call from one of the guys I supported who had been fondly named by the other admins Squeaks because I referred to him as my squeaky wheel. And we set up his travel for the next day because he had to be somewhere. And then he said, "I'm really sorry I'm not going to be here tomorrow. I wanted to take you to lunch on your last day." I was like, "Aw, that is so sweet. Thank you. But that's all right. I understand you got to be somewhere." And he said, "Well, I got to tell you, you are probably one of the best. Correction, you are the best admin I've ever had." And I'm going, "It was Squeaks? Seriously?" And I didn't laugh, but I wanted to. And I thanked him heartily and then went, "Holy Toledo, this stuff really works." It was amazing. So I want to invite you to test this stuff for yourself. First of all, I got 4 ideas for you. Read, read, read. If this is important to you to change your life, read. Practice constructive thinking. Become aware of what's coming on into your mind. Become aware of the words coming out of your mouth or the things you're posting. Pay attention to your words, silent, spoken, and written. And when I talk about the posting, I know that sarcastic humor is funny, but it can backfire, because there is an anger in sarcasm. Be careful what you post. Ask yourself, does this feel good? And in the words of Christian Larson, in the title of one of his books, just be glad. Just be glad. Now, I'm not saying stuff your feelings, ever. I'm saying choose your feelings. Create them with your words, that orderly working out of the principle of being. This awareness, this capacity, this ability to create your reality is built into your being. You inherently know how to feel good, how to make your life fulfilling. And none of it comes from outside of you. Start practicing now from where you are, no matter how old you are. And live the rest of your life being the you that you wish to be. You've got this. And the creative principle, the Heavenly Father, has got your back. In the words of Reverend Jack Boland, "And that's the way it really is." Namaste. And now let's turn to our meditation. I invite you to close your eyes and begin breathing through your heart. Just imagine that your breath is expanding and contracting your heart as you're filling your lungs. And breathe slower and deeper than you usually do, comfortably. And imagine something really pleasing that just feels really good to you. Someone special to you, a pet, walking on the beach, something comforting as you continue to breathe through your heart. And realize Spirit speaks to you through your intuitive heart. Listen to your heart. Ask your heart now to prompt you to change the way you think every time that you say something or think something that you really don't want. Invite your heart to be louder that intuition to speak to you and activate that awareness in the silence. Allow those beautiful prompts to be part of who you are now. Let them flow through you.
Through me as I open up to be an expression of your unfolding peace. Show, Spirit, show through me as I open up to be an expression of your unfolding.